Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Podcast. I'm Caitlin Brodnick.
I'm Sue Smith.
And we love scams. We love scams. We love you. And Sue Smith is back in the hot seat.
What's up? You know what is going on is like what compelled us to start our very first scam was LuLaRoe. And she's back, baby. She's in the news. And I was compelled to bring it to ScamWow.
She had to jump back in here because we've been talking about those hamburger crotch jeans for 3 years now.
Long time.
Long before any documentaries are out.
Honey, we've been talking about those bad designs.
We're talking about the new Lula Rich documentary that's on Amazon. If anyone has seen it, if you haven't, you could Google a little description about it.
It's juicy. Juicy.
It's juicy, but they cover every single thing that's been in the news, too. There wasn't too many new things except, well, we'll get into it.
Wait, Katie, did you put on makeup? You look beautiful.
I did put on makeup.
Oh my gosh. You look great.
So I'm scamming. Thank you. I am scamming myself into putting on a face of makeup and getting dressed.
For a drop-off?
For a drop-off, guys. It is really, really working for me. I get myself dressed up, I put on makeup, I put on an outfit, and I get ready just to drop Lewis off at school.
You're starting your day and you're like, yeah.
I am. And I only get dressed up for auditions, which means, you know, sitting in COVID, you're at home, there's no reason to. So I want to audition for a job, a dream job. And so it was always this excitement when I put on my makeup. And so now I'm like, okay, we're doing this for Lewis because this is his new experience in life and we're getting ready. And then the rest of the day, I feel very good. And I'm sure it's just like a placebo effect, but I feel good when I'm putting on makeup because I'm taking the time to take care of myself.
Esteemable acts. They create self-esteem. Yeah.
And you would think like for girls or women to be like, oh, you don't need makeup. You're just, you know, joining the patriarchy or you're just trying to look like somebody or not. It's not that. It's more ritualistic.
It's for you. You know what? I admire your go-get-em spirit with this because I go for a walk every morning with my baby in the stroller out on Hillhurst and Los Feliz, and I see the same people. There is one family with a little baby named Felix who's like Wyatt's age, and I see the same people pretty much every day, and I wear the same clothes, and I'm like,
that's fine.
I saw them yesterday, and the mom, it was like 7:45, the mom was so put together with like black sunglasses, and I'm like there in my like threadbare Target lounge
pants. That's fine.
But I was like, I should put on an outfit for these walks. I should really put on some jeans, something, but I don't. I don't have it in me. So good for you. I don't have it
but
in me.
But Lewis is three now. I didn't. We talked, you guys have heard on this podcast, I would like come on after sobbing after a terrible night's sleep with Lewis. Like I'd call Sue because Alan and I were having a tough night because we were so stressed about getting Lewis to sleep. Like it was the beginning of doing anything with a newborn is awful because they're always about to perish, which is like not, they're just like always about to fall off something or ingest something or knock something over and harm themselves that you don't have time to take care of yourself. But now Luke can be watching Paw Patrol and I can put on glasses. But I'll say one last thing about the moms that get dressed up. And that's a different type of like protection, because I think there's so much identity lost with being a mom that the mom friends I knew that did hair, makeup very early on were very much holding on to the fact, the power of the woman that they are. And I think they felt that they were losing their individuality as a woman and just becoming like mushed with baby and mom. And so for them, it was not an easy act, but like a very serious act to get ready because of their own identity.
I mean, maybe I think this lady works from home and she has a serious job, which as do I, but I you still too. Don't put on clothes.
Who
to go
cares?
To work. But maybe I should. I don't know. Whatever.
No, you shouldn't do anything you don't want to do. I was a garbage bag wearing lady for a long time.
It's all I can do to get out the door and go on these walks.
Just get out the door.
Yeah. Okay. I have tons of notes. We should definitely
Let's get into the scam.
Okay, so the LuLaRoche documentary covering LuLaRoe. LuLaRoe is a multi-level marketing scheme. We're just doing a little primer.
In case you didn't know, in case you didn't read, in case you forgot what had a lapse.
In case you forgot. In episode one, we also have a rundown of this.
Yes.
Episode number one, very first episode. Okay. It is a multi-level marketing scheme where that sells leggings. People sell leggings. You could call it a pyramid scheme in that people are making money beneath you. So you make money on the people that you recruit and bring in as well. So that is a pyramid shape. It is a $5,000 buy-in to start working
at there. At least. Some was $10,000.
Some was $10,000. And that's so much money. Okay, we open on Deanne Stidham and her husband, Mark Stidham. Beautiful office. The first shot, I think, is beautiful because she's wearing, we get a shot of these Valentino shoes.
Oh, I didn't even realize. I was just like, those look rich, you know.
Yeah. Expensive studded heels. And then she says, the woman in me wants to straighten out the fringe, to
and
fluff
she
out
does.
The fringe on the rug.
She gets on her knees and orders people around.
A rug. Yeah. She gets on her knees and straightens out the fringe on the rug. I just think that's so telling right away. Like, she's wearing these expensive shoes. She's identifying as a woman and what women want to do. And like, and that is like encompasses her whole thing. She's like making money and she's rich and she's like making money on the boss at the back of this like boss babe culture, which is annoying. And so the whole documentary interviews the people at the top of the pyramid. So the people who got into LuLaRoe early.
Are successful.
Made a ton of money on this. But it also goes into what happens when it goes down. Okay. The reason we hate this is because it preys on stay-at-home moms. Mm-hmm. So it is like, are you a boss babe? Do you want to make money working from home and support and be with your family and have it all? And we hate that it preys on that.
Well, they basically found, like all marketing schemes, some target new immigrants, some target kids out of college, but the MLM, this one targeted the demographic of specifically white women who were college, high school educated, chose to stay at home and raise their children because financially, like whatever the situation was, that was the choice that they made. But there is a great pain and pressure, as we even talked about in the beginning of this, of being a mom and juggling it all. So they not only picked that demographic, they fed off of that demographic, ensuring them that with this program, like all MLMs do, it'll be different for you. It's different with us. And you can be a person that no one expected you to be. It really fed off of that. And what's so heartbreaking is it's a tough, sad place being a new mom. It's scary. We talked about identity. Yeah. Like, I don't have a single pair of jeans that fit me. Like, do I want to leave my house right now? Never. You know, like, just there's so much going on. And they fed this mantra, as like Sue said, the boss babe, was that you're powerful. You can do it from home and you can make money on your own while still parenting. But we'll tell you now, the people that made the money openly said they had to put so much of their life into this LuLaRoe, they neglected their parenting. They weren't with their children. They weren't watching their kids grow up. And so it was just a complete falsehood that they sold all these mothers on.
Yes. So Dean and Mark, we can tell right away that they're good salespeople. Mm-hmm. They have stories that they tell. You can tell they tell them over and over again.
That's what we were saying. Alan was like, they had a set. He said something. And she goes, oh, and that's what I love about you. And Alan was like, they've rehearsed this. They've done this.
They've said this over and over again.
And did you catch, Sue, their origin stories, their big stories of their family was when parents was all about money. Did you see that?
Yeah. Dad was a candy salesman and dad led us to believe we could do anything. I come from one of 11 and her maiden name is Startup.
And the guy like tears up about his dad talking about him never wanting to settle and being an entrepreneur. And Alan, we're watching, we're like, wait, you're crying because, and you're both explaining how your parents were so great. It was all money based. It wasn't they spent time with me. It wasn't they loved me. They hugged me. It was like, and they really got a lot of money. God damn it. They're beautiful people, those rich parents.
I wrote that he was fake crying. It seemed like he was fake crying about that.
I hated him.
And then Deanne tells another improbable story of her mom making $3,000 and then just throwing money over the banister to all her kids.
Throwing cash at her children. And she said, I'm chasing that my whole life. And I was like, you're fucked. You are so fucking weird. And needless to say, if you create... The goal of this, they said, was to help other women, but really the goal was that they discovered they could sell a product, make a huge markup on it, and they both just, they even said, like, I had dollar signs in my eyes. I wasn't stopping.
Right, exactly. So then we have this story of Deanne starting these dress parties, reselling dresses from that she saw at a swap meet and skirts that she did that for 27 hours straight, I think. And then she started making skirts and sold everything. And then we have this awkward moment where she says about her husband, there are a lot of times I hate him. And he's just like, what?
Like, yeah.
He doesn't say like me too or whatever. And she makes it as a joke. And it's the most awkward thing. And they hold on it to like get the moment afterwards. It's wonderful.
I think Alan and I were talking over it because we were just like, we hate, like she hates him. And then she said, and there's times where I hate him.
Oh my God.
It's so creepy. And so she found out a way, basically like any retailer does, is that you get something wholesale and then you sell it at a market price. But what was making these so specific is it was like a Tupperware party where you would go into someone's home or you go into someone's basement or cafeteria even. And it was person-to-person shopping, and she would get that markup and not having to rent a space. She did it herself. But there's also this element of, and they have it at Tupperware parties, they have it at Avion or whatever, like Mary Kay.
Yeah,
that the person selling it is a close friend. They're inside your home or you're inside their home. There is a social pressure and a social agreement that she would constantly sell out because these were also women that were her peers and friends. And so it wasn't like you can walk through a store and go, that's not really me, or I can't really afford that. There was this added dimension and pressure that she crushed at. Like she could get anyone she knew to buy anything.
Yeah. So what I have written, what is really being sold is unlimited opportunity, which, yes, you're selling like, look at all you can do. Like, look at the possibilities are endless. And if you're not making money, you're just not working hard enough.
They kept saying that to people. They basically, with MLMs, they said it's your fault if you're not making enough money. But statistically, at a certain point, there's no way to make enough money. The market was so overly saturated. So that was, there was a myriad of excuses that the owners would say to people and give to people to take away any of the pressure or responsibility of having actually like a crap business with bad products. They would say it was that person's fault. They would call them lazy. Mm-hmm. It was such bullying. I mean, you know, we hate these people.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're awful. But also it ties into the American dream overall. Yeah. It's like if you're not doing well, you're not working hard, which I think is bullshit because we need to talk about like the whole American dream of like if you just put in a little elbow grease and you can do better than your parents. And that's just not true if you don't come for money or if you don't have some help along the way. It's simply not true.
Or if you're a millennial and you've had like enormous economic hardship, you've had a stock market, like a crash in 2007. Like we just, there's so much set up against us. And I'll tell you, Sue, this is what I'm lying to myself. I've been watching on TikTok. They're talking about, Alan's going to hate this, drop shipping businesses. Uh-huh. And Alan goes, and I was like, Alan, but what if I had a dropshipping business?
So bad.
And he's like, Katie, no, you can't watch LuLaRoe and tell me seriously you want a dropshipping business. But I will say, I like the idea of like curating houseware and then being like, guys, this is the best milk frother. Like, I like to be able to tell my friends, this is great.
I think that's different because dropshipping is literally like reselling shit from China.
I know. And he goes, Kate, you did that like Audrey Kitchen thing. And I was like, I know, but I need money.
No,
like,
don't
I,
do
I
that.
Also, I know I won't. It's I want, bad. I won't. But I feel for these women who are like, the LuLaRoe women, you know, they're told all you have to do is sell this. And then who doesn't want an extra $200 or $300 a month?
So then we start talking to some of the first retailers. And these ladies made so much money and that they won't even tell you how much they made.
Millions. They won't tell you because they feel really bad.
Some of them were making like $150,000 a month just on bonuses, which is bonuses came from people joining, like recruiting new people from their downline.
The part that made this very much like an MLM and a pyramid scheme really is that you weren't making money off of the skirt and the product that you were selling. You were making money if you recruited 7 more people paying $5,000 each to join LuLaRoe. So you would get a point, you would get a section of that $5,000 and then you would pay that to whoever recruited you. So it just goes up, up, up to the highest level. So the skirts weren't actually selling that much. They were making some money off of retail, but the first people who bought in, they called them sponsors and they would sponsor new people. Yeah. That is how they made their money, by recruiting more people. So more $5,000 payers come in, and that is actually who they were making money off of. Not only are you making money off of the people coming in, but you get a monthly bonus and benefits depending on how many people you have working under you that you've recruited.
Yeah, exactly. So they're still selling skirts until like 2014, and then they finally have the leggings. Put leggings in, and the leggings
finally
just pop. Finally,
ugliest white lady stuff I've ever seen. It's so,
and we
bad.
Have this. Oh, what is her name? Is it Lachey? This is all white ladies. So we have Sam Schultz, who is Deanne's nephew. Everybody from the family. There are 11 kids between the two of them. They
I
all
have
get
to talk about
in.
Sam Schultz.
They all get folded in into this company in various places,
and
right?
They cry. Kids cry when they're interviewed and they say, my parents finally asked me to be a part of it, because I'm sure you these parents didn't give a fuck about their kids until they were making money for them.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that was their value.
So Sam is like, he's the events director.
Sam is like a sad theater major who can't figure out his life.
Oh, no.
I definitely went to college with a couple of Sams.
Oh, of course. But Sam is like, so we decided to have a huge cruise. We were like, we're targeting the older millennial demographic. Who is someone they love? Mario Lopez. Let's get Mario Lopez to come on this cruise. And then he...
As a marketing technique for all of the LuLaRoe salespeople to take photos with him and post it on their Instagram.
And then Sam says that happened over the weekend and they posted on their Instagram. And then on Monday, they had 11,000 people who wanted to join. So this is a very specific white lady, older millennial demographic. I'm surprised I didn't get roped in.
I know. I'm saying, like, I'm sure we have friends of ours who are like, I did a little LuLaRoe. And he was acting like he's this like great guy, but he looked like such a fucking loser. I'm sorry. I hope he's not listening, but he just looked like such a dumbass. Like, he was just putting on these, they were trying to make any sort of stupid marketing thing cool. Like, no, you aren't a concert promoter. You're selling leggings, guys. Like, it looks so silly. And
it's all white ladies. But then there's this woman, Lachey, who works for the company, like in their corporate office. She has this wonderful moment. So we're talking about the cruises.
So let me just explain the cruises. So they decide that they have so many people that they're going to do a LuLaRoe cruise that I believe like people had to pay for it, but it was just like another way to blast social media, make everybody feel, you know, FOMO if they weren't invited. And they wanted, and she was now a salesperson. She moved up and they wanted her to join.
And I think the cruise was for like the top salespeople or whatever. So Lachey gets invited on the cruise and she was like, thank you, but no thank you. I love white people, but I am not going out to sea with white people for a week.
Well, to be so on funny. A boat, she was like, I'll see you when you get back to land. And it's like, yeah, that does sound horrible.
It's all white people, there's not very many. I mean, there's a handful of people of color, but really Barely. Not many. But it's because it's praying. These are some of the slogans, the marketing slogans. Helping families, blessing lives, make full-time pay, part-time work, boss babe overall. Those are some of the marketing slogans. So I think this is, I don't want to say it's just Mormon, but like it's Mormon-y.
What I believe happened in like a lot of these sort of cult formed and all of these sort of cults and all of these crazy MLMs, it starts with just a basic idea that anybody can join, anybody can join. And then when they need the owners and the like heads of it need more power, they start to do more, inflicting more rules and more things that everybody has to have. Like everybody had to wear a bunch of LuLaRoe. Like the bonus checks, they said, spend your bonus checks. Don't give them to your family. Like they had promised that, you know, you'd be able to support your family. Spend your bonus check to show everyone how much money you're making and to recruit more people so they can see how profitable you are. That keeps somebody completely locked into LuLaRoe. Then they started asking husbands to join wives. They started to create all of these situations that made their salespeople codependent. And then they said they started pushing on religious tones and Mormonism and making women feel that they were inept and sort of flipping it on people and saying you have the freedom to do whatever you want, but if you don't do what we want, you're worthless piece of shit.
Yeah, pretty much. So this was all in the early stages. They wanted to target older millennial women, stay-at-home moms. By 2016, the company had made $70 million, which was crazy. By 2017, I believe, they're now at 15,000 retailers, which is so many.
But then they went down again, right?
They went down 6, after 000. That later.
Yeah, yeah.
Lachey has this great story of wearing Chanel to her first day of work in the office.
Beautiful Chanel.
Beautiful Chanel. And Deanne sees her and makes her change into LuLaRoe.
Yeah. Says that's not LuLaRoe. She goes, yeah, it's Chanel. And that was such a perfect snapshot of this idea that if you don't conform to everything we are in your life, in your personal life, in your literal clothing, you can't make it here. When they recruited you to say you could have a comfortable life, a work-life balance, they basically took over your life balance.
Well, that's why I think Lachey is like the most brilliant one, because she's like, these leggings are so fucking ugly, but these women are going crazy for them. Let me just get on board.
She didn't drink the Kool-Aid. So they also interviewed another. It was interesting because the business then had to start recruiting workers like accountants and people in marketing who actually knew what they were doing. So as the business was growing, they hired more people and they would interview this man who seemed like a savant in whatever his job was. He was in like customer service and computers.
Yeah.
And he also was very confused about what was happening. You know, he didn't come in because he was a single mom looking for a Hail Mary. He just came in because he needed a job, basic job. And he was like, this is bizarre. What we're doing is bizarre. So I think he and Lachey were able to have a little bit of a perspective on it that a lot of the mothers didn't.
Yeah. So the whole time, we're now entering episode 2. The whole time this documentary is spliced with deposition footage throughout the documentary, because Washington State eventually files a lawsuit against them. And the deposition footage is hilarious because everything they're asked in depositions, they're just denying and saying, I don't remember. They get asked, can you tell me the name of your office or the address of your office? And Deanne says, I don't remember. So they're just saying, I don't remember for everything. And then the people interviewed would just contradict everything that was said in the deposition. So it's a really hilarious contrast.
They also had all these footage of meetings and like group marketing events and social parties where they would literally say like, we want to get away from the MLM image. We want to be the mother, the warmth image or something. And then in the deposition and interviewed by attorneys, or they'd say, you know, do you admit you're an MLM? And the person would go like, I've never said that in my life.
Yeah.
They just lied. Their basis for everything legal is they just lied. And Deanne, the woman in it, talked about how she learned this manipulation from her mom.
Yeah.
Like she's been born and bred to just manipulate and lie to get what she wants.
Yeah. So as we said, the startup costs are $5,000 to $10,000. She would tell people to do anything to get another credit card, ask family members to help out, even sell their breast milk. And in the deposition, they say flat out, did you ever tell anyone to sell their breast milk to get the startup costs? And she says, No, I don't recall. And then later there's footage of her actually doing that, which is just wild.
Yeah.
Which I think if you can make money selling your breast milk, do it. But like not to do an MLM. Like if you have an excess supply and you can sell it, great. That's good.
But that and what they weren't doing, they were almost saying you should be selling your breast milk because you have this natural resource. If you don't sell your breast milk, you're some kind of an idiot. Which again, there are all of these things that they're the pressure that they're putting on moms. Like if it wasn't just this is good business practice. It was if you don't do our business practice, something's intrinsically wrong with you. And look, everybody else is doing it and you're a failure if you can't. It was such bullying as a form of
100%. So then Lachey says Mark and Deanne are never in office because you would know when they were there because the entire family drives Mercedes. And then in the deposition, Mark says they showed up every day. So just this like contradiction.
Just liars.
So funny. They're such liars. The computer customer service guy says they used a Google Doc for data entry, this like massive Google Doc
that they couldn't keep up with because you can two people can change a Google Doc at the same time. And they would say, like, we try all these fancy things, but Google Doc just worked. And I was thinking, no, it's because your son probably only knew Google Doc. They kept hiring their weird sons. Yeah. And wait, we didn't even cover the beginning. Two of their kids married each other.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Two of their kids married each other.
What the fuck? Guys, there's also, they didn't talk about her sister who had the competing line. Remember? We covered that in our episode one.
Yeah.
So this psychotic woman, Deanne, she got married really young, she said. She had a bunch of children. And then she also adopted a bunch of children, which is wonderful. And then when she met Mark, when she met this guy, he had kids from another marriage and they joined their families together. And then they had more sort of wayward children that they invited and created in their family. But their number one thing that they said in the documentary was, well, we got him married off. We got her married off. We got her married off. Their goal was to, the way they believe helping children is to get them married off. And she goes, and luckily, they were just looking right next to each other and those two got married off. And so they said in their wedding, it was for our son and daughter.
Oh, that's
on their
weird
wedding invitation.
It's weird.
I was like, how are we breezing by this?
They're step siblings, but they're still freaking siblings. Like, that's weird.
They're still in the same house. It's super creepy. And also, I was like, wow, your value is money, marrying each other off. It was so fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we go back to our girl, Lachey. So apparently, you sign up to be a retailer and then you wait. You get on a wait list to get an onboarding phone call. And Lachey was the one that was making those onboarding phone calls.
Because after a while, there were so many people who wanted to be LuLaRoe. The people were so good at selling this dream. They didn't even have enough like product at some point. So people then had to wait to be invited to be a salesperson. It wasn't like in the early days where they were recruiting friends and anybody they saw. Now it was this coveted thing that everyone knew.
So apparently you had to be on the wait list for 90 days before. And Lachey says that every time she calls somebody and tells them this is your onboarding call, it was like life changing and they would start crying and freak the fuck out.
Yes.
And she was mandated to onboard 500 people a day. Not just her, but like her department. 500 new people a day.
Phone calls. Yeah. And she said that her department was bringing in like millions a week.
$1 million a day just with her group alone. With onboarding costs. Yeah. So you're thinking like, how can people possibly be making money on the products when there's so many people selling the products?
They're not, honey.
The market's saturated, baby.
Yeah. And also the product starts getting worse and worse.
They didn't get into that enough of like their manufacturing.
All the women talked about these buttery leggings, these incredible leggings, this manufacturing, these amazing leggings. Well, eventually you come to find out that Mark, this guy, and the owner of the manufacturing business that is making these leggings are like at odds with each other and competing. And so the quality starts going really down. So while they're getting millions of dollars recruiting people, they're giving them horrible products.
So they don't go into this enough, but my sister-in-law, who's like very much into the LuLaRoe scene over in Massachusetts, told me that once they started being manufactured in Thailand, the quality went down. So apparently they changed the manufacturers. So salespeople are getting like moldy leggings, they're getting wet leggings, they're getting smelly leggings, and they're just expected to sell them.
And it's your fault if you can't.
The company is taking no responsibility.
Again, they're turning it on them.
Yeah.
They also were saying in an interview, the head guy, Mark, was like, it's so amazing. We have so much product. We don't even have space for it all. So where they were putting it was outside in uncovered bins, just like a bin that you would see like a bunch of stuff thrown in for Goodwill or a bunch of stuff literally thrown in the garbage, but they were product to be sold.
Yeah.
So this one woman said you'd open a box and one pack of legging, because it was in a weird bin, was just soaking wet and smelled like mold. One looked like a raccoon had been in there, and they were just stuck with it. They just couldn't do anything. And the owners would say, well, just sell it at a markdown. But then they take a hit.
Then they make less. Yeah.
And then the person selling it loses their credibility, loses. They don't have the great product anymore. Nobody wants to go to them. They'll go to her cousin who has better leggings.
Right. So Mark says that they're selling 100,000 garments a day at this point, and they're making less than 3,000 of any single garment, which means there's a demand for certain patterns and everything, because some of them are rare.
Which happens with makeup. We've talked about it with like Kylie. You make this sort of demand, but
yeah. And then we have an interview with the pattern designer, whom I fucking love. And the pattern designer is told to make 100 new designs a day, which is bananas.
A day. Can you imagine even making 100 doodles a day? Mm-hmm. Like 100 a day and turning them in. And she wasn't the only designer. It wasn't 100 a day for her.
For everybody.
She had multiple people each doing 100 a day.
Yeah. So, and there have been some copyright infringements. And she said that they would just Google stuff and then change one thing on the image they find.
Yeah, they said copy, paste it, then change it 20 times. 20%, yeah. And then she said some people didn't even change it. Some of her like younger designers who were trying to like scramble and just change the color, shift it sideways. She said some of the stuff was so ugly, but she knew that these weird ladies would like it.
She said she was always told to make it pop. And a quote from her, which I love, is, "One man's trash is another man's treasure."
And that is LuLaRoe. It is quite trash. Yeah. What you also learned is that they weren't hiring anyone who was actually qualified for the position. So they'd have an art director, they'd have a head of marketing who ended up being their cousin or their friend from church or something. And that person believed they were very qualified, but the team knew they were not qualified for this demand, for this quality, for what they were assuming that they could do.
Yes. So at this point, we have 26,000 retailers. And Shay becomes a retailer. First, she was just working in the office. Now she's a retailer. Facebook Live plays a huge part of growth. So people don't have to go to your homes to have these like Tupperware parties. You can just do it all on Facebook Live. And people are just claiming in there.
And you can tease it. You can say, I'll be on at 4 p.m. This is the shirt I'm going to sell. So people would then like start gearing up and getting ready. Because somehow it became a frenzy. Like for some reason, everybody wanted these things.
I know. And then they make a music video about unicorn hunting, which the leggings that everybody wants that are in demand are called unicorns.
That's terrible.
It made me embarrassed to be a white lady. It was such a bad music video.
Oh, first of all, I'm constantly embarrassed. It's awful. And what's crazy is that it wasn't like you're watching Settlers from the 1920s being like, isn't this silly soda pop? And you're like, oh, you guys are idiots. You're watching people now who genuinely are like drinking this Kool-Aid thinking that they're cool, and nothing about them is cool. Nothing is hip. It's not even like they were so quaint and old and dated and stale, but it was during right now.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So we explained the thing, commission on the downline, which is when you're bringing people in. And then one of these women who they're interviewing, who's at the top of the pyramid, Ashley, who's like gotten on the ground floor, said she had 5,000 people in her downline. So she's making money on all their profits, which is wild.
And making money on their profits, their buy-in, their losses. So these women were getting very emotional talking about, and they didn't ever say anything because they didn't think they wanted to like indict themselves or give too much away. But they definitely were putting pressure on these women to sell more because they had pressure on themselves. And they said, one of these women was like, I feel bad. I like duped a lot of women into getting involved in this. People lost money because I told them this was such a great thing and it wasn't. And they were manipulating other women.
Yeah, so I don't have it written down if it was a year or a month, but one girl says she made $10,000 on sales of the leggings, but made $65,000 in recruitment bonuses. So at that point, it becomes like trafficking, kind of like human trafficking. You're just signing it people up to make money on people.
It is.
You know?
Yeah, it is the traffic that gets it. They were constantly showing off the few people at the top that made so much money. And at a point, there was an expert there who was wonderful, an MLM expert who was saying that there's no way, there's no probability that you will make that much money at a certain point.
Yeah.
When the pyramid becomes so wide and there's so many more people involved, you'll never make the amount of money that the people at the top will make. But this entire time, that's what they're advertising, that's what they're pushing, and that's what they're promising for all the new people.
Yeah. So we're told that Deanne created the bonus program, so bonuses for recruiting new members. But then we cut to deposition footage where she says she didn't, of course,
and she doesn't know anything about it. And you see her writing checks to people. You see her saying thank you for these bonuses. I mean, it's bizarre because they recorded all of their events like they were waiting for their own TV show, and instead they got a documentary about how fraudulent they are.
Love it. Now we're at 38,000 retailers. Some people are making $22,000 to $42,000 a month, just on recruitment. And Sam, our friend Sam, the failed theater actor, says that someone made $200,000 a month just on recruitment. And now the focus is on recruitment, not on the product at all.
And that is when it becomes a red flag as an MLM for the state of Washington, actually, because they realize that once you have a product that you're selling, or you have a company that you're selling that no longer is making money off of the product, but making money off of the people that are supposed to benefit from this, that is an MLM scheme. It's one of the definitions. And it is just simply about personal property and, you know, personal finances versus a product. And that's when people kind of started to look into it, when it had that shift, when they gave those bonuses and they changed from just saying that they were salespeople to creating this organization.
Yeah, exactly. And so they wanted them to post every day on social media and hashtag it with because of LuLaRoe so that they're projecting this like perfect life image.
It was all encompassing. Everything had to be about it.
We mentioned the cruises. You had to sell $12,000 a month to go on the cruises.
They said people had to pay for their own flights and hotels to do any of these events too. They didn't pay for a single thing.
Yeah, they required the people at the top to go on expensive leadership events and they didn't pay for it. Oh, in 2017, they had Katy Perry at one of their events in a stadium. And Sam tells us he spent $30 million on that event, which is on wild. The event.
$5 million just for Katy Perry, like $10 million for security.
Oh my God.
And it shows Deanna talking with Katy Perry and all this stuff. And during the interview, you know, the court interview, she goes, "I don't know who that is. Katy Percy?
Never heard of her." Yeah, right.
Just fucking. I mean, the amount of lying, I was also just like, wow, you lie about everything. Like, she denies everything.
Yeah. So by the end of 2016, they had over 60,000 consultants and they had made $1.3 billion, which is wild.
Yes.
And Mark says they have 25% growth month over month, which is a ton.
But it's also like unmanageable. Any company that has that for so long and isn't trying to improve the quality, trying to improve even HR.
Yeah.
They didn't do any of that. They just were riding this cash cow. And so if anybody was upset, if there was ever a lawsuit, which we'll get into, for them, it was easier to just settle because they were so fucking rich.
Yeah. So the kind of the gray area here is in our legal system, multi-level marketing is not illegal, but pyramid schemes are. So when most of the money is coming from recruitment and not sales of the actual product, that's when it becomes a pyramid scheme. So that's why it's a fine line. So going back to this hashtag Instagram stuff because of LuLaRoe, they were encouraged to spend their entire bonus check to look good and recruit new people. Mm-hmm. One woman's like talking about all the Louis Vuitton she had, how she spent $10,000 at dinner. And then she says, working for LuLaRoe destroyed my life.
Out of the three people, each got incredible depression and pressure. Two of them had their marriages destroyed.
I know. So now we're getting to episode three, and this is where things take a dark, dark turn with the whole image and looking good stuff. So at the beginning of the episode, they kind of focus on this cult stuff. They said Deanne becomes like a cult leader. One lady says, if she had told me to jump off a cliff, I probably would have.
They were also receiving text messages during this time, I will say. Like, it wasn't just you had a boss or an email. They had tons of personal text messages, and it was becoming very, very personal.
Yeah. So then Mark starts preaching the Book of Mormon at a convention. So it also becomes like super intertwined with religion too, which is a whole different ballgame. I'm sure there's like a lot of guilt feelings and a lot of like maybe these people think they think they're holy or from God or something.
Or historic, like we all have, we talk about that a lot with cults, is that people have their own experience of religion. And so when you start throwing religion at them, they have their own baggage. So suddenly they feel guilty, or they have these old memories, or they have this like perfectionism complex that comes from years of their own trauma. So it really does grab people when you start throwing in Bible stuff.
I know. Mark compares himself to being misunderstood like Joseph Smith, which I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, stop it. Someone says they realize that all the consultants dressed alike. They're blonde, obsessed with weights, their prince. One girl said she realized she was in a cult. And then we meet Becca Peter, who is like this internet sleuth who decides to take him down, which I love. I love these little people that get a bee in their bonnet, you know?
You guys would be like thick as thieves, I was like, that's Sue Smith's new best friend. Oh, well, what was so funny is that she was learning about LuLaRoe because she was on a mommy website with other moms on a Facebook group when she talking about life and motherhood, and the person was really pushing LuLaRoe, and she asked her, well, what do you guys do about taxes? And that was never answered in the whole documentary. I'm like, Alan, what do they do about sales tax? Yeah. Like, how do they? And they said, LuLaRoe just said, don't worry, it's taken care of. But is anyone auditing this? Like, because she was saying, how can you sell something, and what part of it
goes to taxes. You know, they weren't doing taxes at all.
They weren't doing taxes. That never got solved. That I feel like you could get LuLaRoe in some way that nobody was doing the tax work or, oh, it drove me crazy. So that started her spark. And she then started going into it and finding all of these past consultants who were really upset and finally able to admit they weren't being treated right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then she starts taking them down. I wrote, I can't believe Deanne and Mark were agreed to be interviewed for this.
But you know what, Sue? I think they believe the entire time they're better than everyone. They believe they're better than God. They believe they're better than every consultant. They don't care or have value for anyone. So I'm sure they thought they were better than these artsy documentary people. You know what I mean? They had a chip on their shoulder.
Or they were just like, I think they're like fame hungry and just want to be on TV.
Yes. And also they had their routine down. They were like, we do this. We do this banter. It's no problem. And there were times though, guys, it's very fun to watch a person uncomfortable when they're a shitty person. There's times where like Mark would be like scratching his like neck or something. And did you catch this part, Sue, where they say they want to ask Deanne like about women in the industry? And he stops her and he goes, can I say something first? And he cuts her off. The one time they ask her about feminism and being a woman, he shuts her up and says what his opinion is.
Oh, that made me so mad.
We were dying.
And like, he doesn't let her talk. Oh, she can't.
Does not talk.
Oh my God. Oh, I hated that.
She's also giving consultants advice like, blow your husband for 5 minutes a day to get whatever you want. I mean, verbatim. Get on your knees. Yes, she said, get on your knees. It's not that hard. 5 minutes a day to get on your knees to get whatever you want. She sent those. She sent text messages. She told women that she would give her mother, Deanna's mother, wrote a book about basically being a submissive woman and doing whatever the husband needs to then, you know, persuade and control the situation. And Deanna's talking about it. She goes, you know, then the 60s or 70s happened. I don't know what happened then. We were like, the Vietnam War? So civil rights?
So they're preaching boss babe and like, you got this babe, whatever lingo.
You got this dick to blow every night, babe. You are in control.
But they really want the men to be in control. So the whole thing is like, make enough money that the man can, that your dude can quit his job and then take control of your business.
Yeah, it was almost like in the Scientology aspect of they kept changing that when you would get to the next level in sales, in marketing, in your business, then they're like, well, we'll open Pandora's box about this. We'll open this. So it turned out when they got to the highest level, they really just wanted your husband's business.
They called it retire their husbands so they could get to retire their husbands. Ugh.
Yeah.
In 2016, the top 0.1% of retailers made $150K a month in bonuses.
A month! $150K a month!
Well, 80% made nothing. They had these motivational Zoom calls, which we talked about. It was so their advice was to keep buying more and get people to sign up under you. And if you're not doing well, it's your freaking fault.
It's all your fault. They also said, it works if you work it, which is an AA slogan. Oof. I think they sort of had these motivational speakers they picked from anywhere. They had this one woman talking about don't be a victim. It's your fault if you're not making enough money. And people are applauding her. And it was so awful. And one of the motivational speakers said, you don't need to read books. You don't need to exercise. And I was like, what? He basically was saying, shut your life down to sell, sell, sell.
Yeah. So then we're getting, so as we mentioned before, there's this pressure on appearance and because of LuLaRoe and looking good on social media. So then Deanne goes to Mexico to get a gastric sleeve surgery for weight loss.
And I think she's getting a cut in that, Sue.
I think she is too.
Okay, because they do an interview right after she gets the weight loss surgery and she looks creepy as hell, but skinnier. And she says, and I think we brought like 18 down for you. Yeah. So I think she's getting a cut of the surgery.
So then they show a text thread and the text thread is called Tijuana Skinnies and it's pressuring people to go to her doctor in Tijuana and get the gastric sleeve. And I definitely think the doctor is giving her a cut of each person. So this becomes like a pyramid scheme as well.
Yes. And disgusting. She's not talking about it and that's going to come out. Yeah. And it's in, you know, Mexico. So the business is all there. Safe. Yeah. I don't, you know, and it's all in their courts. If anybody did bring it to that, it would be in their country. But she is pressuring people. And also the thing that was very interesting is to find out when these very high earners in LuLaRoe, the people that she, the first consultants or, you know, retailers, quote, that suddenly there was a time in all of these consultants' experiences where she would snap and turn on them. Mm-hmm. So she was like buttering up their friends forever. One consultant said she didn't want to get the sleeve. She said she shut off and Deanna treated her like a piece of, you know, garbage, like she never saw her. And it put that consultant into an incredible downward spiral. This other family, a husband and wife, suddenly Deanna decided she liked the wife more than the husband and shut off on the wife. And so she had this incredible like steel door that emotionally that she would just shut down. And that was when each of the consultants slowly started realizing it was a pyramid scheme, but not until then. Like it didn't matter who they were affecting, how many people were going through bankruptcy, who couldn't afford LuLaRoe anymore, other consultants. It was when the cult leader gave up on that person because they weren't bringing in money, they weren't making the sales or doing the gastric bypass that she'd get a cut on. That's when each of them, in a different way, got completely heartbroken and realized this might actually be a scam.
Yeah, and I wish they had dug a little bit deeper into the weight loss thing and the negative side effects and the doctor, but they didn't.
No, but Sue and I, we covered that in the first episode.
We knew.
I was like, guys, this is fucked. Then her sister, okay, we have to talk about this briefly, guys. Her sister created a contrasting, like Mormon-based fashion company, and her sister was also telling people to lose weight. So instead of having people be healthy in their lives, they're just saying like, put a sleeve on it and that's how to lose weight. It was so creepy.
Put a sleeve in your belly and
in your belly
on your
sleeve
shirt.
It up. Yeah. Wear sleeves, ingest sleeves.
Yeah, exactly. Wear sleeves, swallow sleeves. Yeah. There it is. They didn't go into her sister Diane enough. Apparently there's a lot of tension there. I wonder why. I wonder if there's like a lawsuit or something.
I think her and her sister, didn't they start in the beginning together and then they branched off? And so they said in the beginning of the whole documentary that like we were really similar. Me and my sister, we look like twins. And then they never spoke about her again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So then the product, we're in 2016, end of 2016, 2017. Product starts to go downhill, as we mentioned, and things start coming apart at the seams. We get a Facebook group with 16,000 people in it of LuLaRoe fails. And then there's a funny scene where they show the designer, one of the gross, like one of the funny designs. Yeah. And she just laughs.
Oh, yeah. The designer we were talking about who was like young and creative. I don't even think she saw 80% of the designs that people under her were sending in. And she was just cracking up. Cause she's like, yeah, that's god awful. Like
you're buying it. Like,
yeah. She's like, you guys are idiots. And it sort of became, I think she was the only one, maybe she and the designers were the ones who were like actually laughing at people. Everyone else was pretty much like down to drink the Kool-Aid.
But I mean, it is god awful, but these women don't pick that. Like they don't have a choice in the designs they're getting sent and they just have
to sell
it.
That's the thing too.
You know?
That's the thing too. So part of the LuLaRoe system is that you get some mysterious packages, which made it very alluring, I think, to join LuLaRoe because then you could get, like they're saying, like a unicorn pair of tights or tights that you thought were discontinued and it turns out they just were sitting in a moldy storage bin and they came back and you're so excited. They had all these weird, they tried to make it like an incentive and surprising because they kept the salespeople in the dark. In that way, it made it more coveted and like a surprise each time you got your box, but also it made them completely held captive to whatever garbage they were given.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks. And these women put all of their money in it. They put their breast milk money in it and they just want to sell it and they can't.
All that milk.
Yeah. Their milk money.
Their milk money is just gone.
I know. So then the social media, when people commented negatively, their posts were removed. Mark says, we have equal opportunity. We don't promise equal outcome. He's a piece of shit. He says there's no quality problem with the products, just a social media problem, which fuck this guy.
Yeah, they kept blaming it on, they're like, and people are just mean. The press is just bad. And it's like, it's not bad press when like your crotch opens up because your product is bad. That's not being mean. That's saying the facts. Like my vagina is open on the street because your leggings suck. Okay.
Right.
Hamburger is just flopping around.
Yeah, my hamburger's just flapping right out. There's something with a drama triangle, persecutor, rescuer, victim.
That, yes. Okay. So there was a necklace. So people would get a watch or a necklace if they got to a certain level. And these women said that it was like this talisman for them to have, like how companies would give you like a Rolex watch, but it was just a watch that said LuLaRoe on it, all branded. So they were so proud when they could get that token. One of the things was a necklace that had a triangle around it. And they were using the triangle. So Sue and I have talked about like sobriety. So sobriety is used as like, there are triangle references, and sobriety is a really loving like
unity, service, and recovery are they?
Yeah,
they
just really like positive things. This triangle is like, don't be a victim, a shithead, and a fuckface. Like it was, they turned so many wonderful positive things into abusive stuff. So if you wore the triangle, it was like, yeah, I'm not going to be a victim, a fuckface, or a loser. I'm sure somebody's listening is like, no, that's not what they use, but it's something like that.
Persecutor, rescuer, victim. And if you complained, you were the victim. So you couldn't complain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so bad. And they would make fun of people for complaining. And you could get suspended for expressing concern. Sam gets fired for having a relationship with the retailers, which he said isn't true.
Well, no, he said he quit. Remember, he said he mm-hmm. quit. And then a memo came around that he had relationships with multiple retailers. And we were like, that checks out. Like, the whole thing checks out. Oh, my God. This idiot Sam, who I, again, is saying is like a sad theater dropout major. He then, when one of the consultants quit and he got fired and he never worked at LuLaRoe, he messages her like, hey, dog, can you give me $30,000 to put in my weed farm? And it was a scam, and he was being scammed, but he was still like, these people are still psychotic. Like, they can be like, LuLaRoe's crazy, guys, but my weed farm, give me $90,000. It was so insane.
Yeah, the weed farm. It was a scammy weed farm, too. I think the weed farm wasn't even real.
It wasn't. This dumbass has no life experience.
These people organized a class action lawsuit from the Facebook group with 16,000 people in it.
So, let me stop really quick. The class action lawsuit, how that started is one of the women in LuLaRoe. LuLaRoe was doing such bad business and getting such bad press that then they sent out a memo that they would do 100% buyback guarantee. So if you wanted to sell all of your LuLaRoe stuff, LuLaRoe, the company, would buy it back from you, just ship it to them, obviously pay for shipping and all that shit, and they will write you a check for the value of that. So they started doing that with a bunch of people, and I'm sure they were thinking they're just going to send that box to a new person, like they're just going to basically forward your box to the next person who buys in. You know, it wasn't a huge loss for them. But then so many people started doing it that they then started to, and in this first memo, they said it was open-ended. There was no time limit. Go for it, to try to show in good faith that they weren't keeping anyone captive, basically financially and business-wise. Then within a couple months, they shut that entire thing down and said, it's no longer a program that works. So one of the women said, I need to find a class action lawyer. And she went to a lawyer in New Jersey who she had known from a mommy group in New Jersey, which I loved. I fucking loved this New Jersey lawyer woman. She was so badass. And there were multiple ways in which basically they could put out multiple lawsuits against LuLaRoe. And they finally started talking.
Yeah. So in September 13th, 2017, they go back on the buyback policy, and they went back to their original policy with tons and tons of stipulations. And then it becomes like a class action lawsuit.
You can't go back on a contract.
Right. Yeah. When they did the 100% buyback policy, there was a mass exodus and people were like, okay, see you later. Bye bye. And then
it worked in their favor because a lot of people were like, see, this place is so safe. A lot of women joined because they thought it was such a safe company. Mm. And I think a lot of the top salespeople, when they were recruiting people, use that as an example of like, look, you know, they're good people. They wouldn't be good people if they didn't give you your money back. And then the woman who brought it to her lawyer actually said that she went through a miscarriage and had postpartum depression and wasn't able to send her inventory as fast as they demanded it, and that should not be held against her. And it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. She had a medical reason. And so that was able to sort of like spark other women, and she talked about it and started sharing it. So then multiple lawsuits were able to funnel through.
Yeah. And at the same time, they changed the bonus checks thing to be based on sales and not on signups. So all the top girls started making half as much.
No, one was like, I made $3,000, and she was used to be making $120,000 a month.
And they did this to make it less pyramid schemey.
Yeah. And there's video of them and recorded data of them saying, like, how do we make this less period schemey? But of course, they've denied all of that as well.
Of course. Yes. Kelly Picaro is the attorney's name in this woman, Stella's neighborhood. And Stella's the one who starts a class action lawsuit. We are in episode 4, if I did not mention that. Stella has $20,000 left of inventory. Oh.
But then, so happy spoiler, it does get settled because what's so crazy is that LuLaRoe is now a $1 billion company. It's still making money. People are still selling it and like still buying this shit that they can just settle out with a family, settle these lawsuits, and they don't really take a huge hit. They're just bothered, basically.
Yeah.
But I'm happy for her. She said that they settled outside of court and that, you know, hopefully she's taken care of.
Yeah. In 2018, they had over 20 lawsuits, which good, sue their asses. They spent a ton of money on having Kelly Clarkson for their annual convention, but they wouldn't pay their retailers back. Great.
Kelly Clarkson, she had no idea.
So in 2019, we have the Washington State civil lawsuit for violating the pyramid scheme law. Washington State sues the company, and that's where all this deposition footage has come from. And Washington State says they couldn't have a, it was impossible for people to have a successful business just selling the product. And then, of course, in the deposition, they say they don't remember anything.
So looking, this is still going on today, but February 2nd, 2021, LuLaRoe is to pay $4.75 million to resolve an A.G. Ferguson lawsuit.
Is that $4.7 million going to Washington or going to retailers? Do you know?
Oh, so Ferguson, this company who's won, is providing financial. This is from the Washington State Office of Attorney General. And Ferguson is providing financial payments to LuLaRoe retailers who lost money or who may have quit their job or sacrificed opportunities as a result of LuLaRoe's deception, but who failed to make a full-time, quote, income as LuLaRoe promised. So that's great. That's about like the basis of them. They're using that in this lawsuit that you can make full-time pay with little work. The Attorney General's office estimates that approximately 3,000 Washingtonians will receive checks. Every Washington retailer who lost money under LuLaRoe's pyramid structure will receive restitution. Now that's just Washington State. And that's what's wonderful because I'm so happy for them because each state does have parameters and limits for people to not be able to take care of business. I mean, take advantage of people and businesses like this. So Washington State got theirs out early. And I'm really hopeful that other states are going to come in and follow suit. It also says in this court document, in addition to paying $4.75 million, LuLaRoe is required to publish an income disclosure statement that accurately details retailer income potential, calculate bonuses based on retail sales, like we said, conduct random and targeted audits to determine whether sales are to genuine customers rather than an effort to manipulate the compensation system, allow new realtors to return all inventory not eligible for refund to the retailer, profit certain types of deductions from refund request, warn retailers when the inventory they are purchasing is seasonal or otherwise does not qualify for return or refund. So they didn't even tell people if the material was, they didn't know what they were sending people. So you can, if you are a former LuLaRoe retailer with questions, you can contact the office at
in Washington, I think.
Mm-hmm. LLR restitution at ATGW. Okay. It's in the notes. But you can send them an email.
So,
and file a complaint.
Yes, which is great. And as this documentary wraps up, we have some like really sad turnouts for some of the retailers. Like one girl went bankrupt. One girl had to sell her house. One girl got divorced. And then surprisingly, there are still some retailers that are still in business and selling LuLaRoe, the girls from
that
the top, which is wild.
That one girl, this one woman is like, yeah, I still have it all the time. She's psychotic, but she also said, you know, LuLaRoe, for some people, she's like, it was the reason I live in this house with my family. We couldn't afford to live, basically. So she, for her, it was an incredible change in her life, and she liked the pressure and she liked the demand, and I don't have no idea.
I don't know. Well, good for her, as we say. Yeah.
Good for her.
So, and in 2021, they're still in business, but they've slashed their startup costs by 90%. So if you want to get into it, you can.
It's not going
to
work.
And you won't have to sell your breast milk.
Don't sell that breast milk. Keep it. Keep it. Do whatever you want with it. Play with it in your house. I just don't give it to Lulu. Don't sell it for LuLaRoe.
Right. So that's it. And what a great documentary. That it could have been a little bit harsh, or a little bit.
I think what they were hoping is that those shitty ass characters would do it themselves. They would make themselves look as stupid as they did. And that is what happened.
Totally.
But there were just all these side tangents. I was like, I want to know about that creepy ass family. Like, you know that there are some insane religious pressures that there's. With all the kids they have, every single person was married. I'm like, they're not all straight. You know, there's some queer people in there that are have their own identity crisis. I want to know their story.
Totally.
Like, there's just things happening that I wanted to hear more about. But I do think down the line, we're going to see more states and other companies suing LuLaRoe.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully.
I can't wait. Burn in hell.
Burn in hell. Thank you for letting me bring this to the people. I just felt compelled. I had to.
She had to, guys. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. This is amazing. And, guys, of course, if you have any scams, if you sold LuLaRoe, if you know anything about this, tell us. You can always call us on our Hot Tip Hotline because you know I love a phone call. 347-509-9414.
Or you can email us at scamwildpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes. And we're on the Instas. We're on Twitter. And I never check Twitter, so don't do that. send us messages. And also, guys, if you can rate and review us, that's a huge bonus. It makes a huge difference for us. It's just like a short amount of your time. I always forget to review. And then when I do, I feel like a good person. So that can be yours, too.
If you want to feel like a good person today, go do it.
You can do it.
All right. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate you.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
There's something weird going on with influencers right now. I'm a little freaked out. They just get everything they want. Everything's a little too perfect. Their smiles are a little too straight. They're using filters I can't find anywhere. I know what I'm about to say might sound a little unhinged, but I think it might be witchcraft. At least, that's what Jenna Clayton thought right before she went missing. We're excited to introduce a new show from Realm, If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, starring Oscar-nominated actress Gabourey Sidibe. When a Black writer goes missing, a white podcast host with a savior complex takes up the cause of finding her and collides with a coven of influencers she suspects are responsible. This show is a little bit of The Craft meets Mean Girls meets Get Out. Learn more about If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It at realm.fm and be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.